This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. We'll take a tour of a large-scale sculpture exhibit highlighting the importance of pollinators and insects in our environment.
I think it's important that the visitors, after seeing David Rogers' Big Bugs Plus Pollinators exhibit, really go home with a sense of, what can I do?
That story and more coming up this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is proudly provided by Luke Frazier. Governor Jim Justice plans to call another special session of the state's legislature in the coming months. Chris Schultz has more.
Speaking at a revenue announcement event Monday, the governor announced he plans to call a special session to cut an additional 5% from the state's personal income tax. Justice previously called the legislature into special session in May to make appropriations that were incomplete at the end of the regular session in March. Justice pleaded with lawmakers present at the event to pass another piece of legislation when they reconvene.
First and foremost, pass, please, for God's sakes, 11, pass my child care tax credit. It was $4.2 million. It's next to nothing.
He says the tax credit, paired with another personal income tax cut, will help young families that are, quote, paying out the yin-yang today to try to be able to have child care. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Chris Schultz in Morgantown.
West Virginia residents could soon see their income taxes go down further. Jack Walker tells us why.
The state collected $826 million more in revenue than had been budgeted for this fiscal year, according to Governor Jim Justice. A 2023 law that cut state income tax by more than 20% also set triggers for future cuts. Anytime the state collects more revenue than it did in 2019, the law automatically reduces taxes based on the revenue gained. Justice said during a virtual press briefing Monday that cutting taxes could increase spending in West Virginia.
It's the people's money. And if there's a way to do it and put more money back into people's pockets, you know what'll happen? They'll spend it here.
While a final figure hasn't been pinned down, Justice said he expects the trigger to cut income taxes by 3 or 4%. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jack Walker in Shepherdstown.
Writer Jonathan Corcoran grew up in Elkins. While in college, his mother discovered he was gay. She disowned him and told him to never come back to West Virginia. She died in 2020. They never reconciled. Corcoran, a writing professor at New York University, has written a book, No Son of Mine, which explores grief and his relationship with his mother. Inside Appalachia's Bill Lynch spoke with the author, who began with a reading.
I'm going to read today from a little section in the fourth chapter of the book. This is a book about when my mother disowned me for being gay. But after she did this, it wasn't just a clean cut. She called me. There was a time where she called me every week, every couple of weeks, early in the morning. She would say some kind of vile things, some strange things. I got the sense that she couldn't let me go. So I would wake up to her phone calls. They would last for maybe a minute or two, and then she'd disappear into the air. She was a monster then, but like all monsters, she was vulnerable. Every 10th call, she would slip up. She'd forget the script. She'd ask, "Who are you?" She'd ask, "What happened to you?" Her voice came through the phone like the sounds of a ghost. And though I was raw, and though I'd been stripped of dignity and stabbed with her vitriol, though her words salted my heart to the point where I thought it had shriveled to nothing, there was a little bit of something still pumping there. I had only ever wanted to thrive. "I'm me," I'd say. "I'm the same John you gave birth to. I'm the same John you've always known." I'd speak that tiny truth, and for a short time, that grounding thought was the only thing of which I was sure, though time would pass, and then I'd question even that. We would listen to each other breathing, maybe crying. We would sit there for 5 or even 10 minutes, and out of the static, I'd render her tired body, her dyed hair, her face against the pillow. We were connected by airwaves and genetics and instinct. And then I would hear the phone click. For so long, she was the one who wielded the power. For so long, I continued to pick up the phone.
What was it like going back and looking through your personal history and putting it down onto a page?
It's not an easy process to go and find those details. You know, this is about my late mother. She passed away, and I had this realization that you can't fact check the dead, right? You can't ask them questions anymore. So you're mining both your memories, you're mining your emotions, and you're looking for these little hints of things that are going to spark some remembrance. I found things like her marriage certificate. I found things like old photo albums. I found things like letters from friends. It was painful going through this process. It's about what happened to us. It's about who I was. It's about why she did what she did. Because I also began writing this book after she passed away, the book began to mirror my grieving process in some ways, I think. It becomes a sort of grief memoir. You can see that in the structure. I go back and forth in time. Something triggers a memory, and then I'm back to my childhood. Something triggers another memory, and then I'm back to a moment sitting with her in the city park in Elkins, West Virginia, thinking about the things that have happened. It was hard, but ultimately, by the end of this book, I felt like it was a healing process.
Talk about growing up, Al.
Yeah, I have such fond memories of that West Virginia and that place and time. We were street urchins. We didn't have hovering parents. And so I remember being 5, 6, 7, 8 years old and our parents shooing us out the door. This was before the age of the internet. And so there was a lot of creativity that we shared running around those downtown streets in Little Elkins, West Virginia. Those memories are also, you know, some of them are mirrored by this growing sense that I was different also, right? So I think I realized from a pretty early age that I was gay. And so my life would begin a sort of, it would begin to be a process of both trying to find ways to express that, but also ways to hide that to protect myself. I had the sense that my family was never going to accept me for who I was. And so I would find secret ways, secret friends, secret people that I could share these facts with and sort of begin to grow into my identity.
Have you thought about if you had stayed, if you had gone to WVU and, I don't know, majored in journalism or majored in English or who knows what?
You know, I think a lot about what my life in West Virginia would have been like. But part of the problem that happened to me was that when I was disowned, my mom told me, not just you're no longer part of this family, but you can't come back to West Virginia anymore. She told me to stay away, that this place was lost to me. And I think that that's something that people don't realize with family estrangement. You don't just lose blood, family, and kin. You lose towns. You lose people. You lose geographies. But this estrangement, this disownment that happened between when my mother cut me out of her life really changed the course of my life. It sort of cut off a lot of those opportunities. It took me a long time for me to heal my relationship with West Virginia, to heal my understanding that this place was more than just my relationship with her, right? People get so woven into the fabric of the geographies of our childhood, right? When I look back at West Virginia, I began to only see my mother and her presence hovering over them. Years later, my relationship with West Virginia has been repaired. And when I come home now, I generally have these really positive sort of affirming experiences. And I realize in some ways how much that place has changed since I've gone.
The book is No Son of Mine by Jonathan Corcoran. Jonathan, thanks a lot.
That was Bill Lynch speaking with author Jonathan Corcoran. No Son of Mine is available through the University Press of Kentucky. To hear more of that interview, visit us online at wvpublic.org. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:53. Areas of fog this morning, becoming mostly sunny today, highs in the 70s and 80s, clear skies tonight with lows in the 50s and 60s, and sunny tomorrow with highs in the 70s, 80s, and low 90s. The Allegheny Front, based in Pittsburgh, is a public radio program that reports on environmental issues in the region. Here's their latest story about an art exhibit highlighting our local pollinators.
There's no reason to be afraid of bugs, even if they're 10 feet tall. This is the Allegheny Front Environment Update. I'm Carol Holsoppel. A large-scale sculpture exhibit at the Pittsburgh Botanic Garden in Settlers Cabin Park, west of the city, highlights the importance of pollinators and insects, from maintaining biodiversity in an ecosystem to growing our food. David Rogers, Big Bugs Plus Pollinators, features 10 pieces from the Long Island artist who works with native wood and natural materials. The Botanic Garden's Mark Miller and Beth Exton gave me a short tour.
One of the first exhibits you'll come to when you walk out of our Welcome Center is the hummingbird up here in our orientation garden. It is total about 10 feet tall, 8 feet wide at its largest point. So it shows a flower with about 3 buds on it. And then the hummingbird is like hovering over above the one bloom that's about to open.
What kind of wood is this made out of?
This one is black walnut and rainbow poplar for the bird. And then the flower is red cedar and black locust.
The hummingbird is very much attracted to our native cardinal flower, Lobelia cardinalis. And that's exactly what we have planted around the sculpture.
And I think you've shared with me, Mark, that the cardinal flower has that tubular form to it.
Yes.
That helps. That's what the hummingbird needs to get its beak down into.
That's exactly right. And so you see them tend to go after hot-colored, tubular flowers.
I love the way the flower stems are bent with the natural wood.
Mm-hmm. Looks like it's kind of blowing a little bit in a soft breeze.
I consider it polished and refined.
All right, lead on.
So you can see him starting to poke out through the trees. He's our daddy long leg. You can walk underneath him and just kind of meander around all of his legs. But he's probably 12 feet tall at the highest point. He is standing guard here in our festival lawn.
Technically not an insect. This is an arachnid. It has 8 legs, not 6. But definitely an important part of our ecosystem.
How so?
It is beneficial. It will go after pests as food. I think that's important. So this one has a body of willow.
All right, I'm going to go under.
His legs just look so delicate this way. Like, you don't think of that when you see them live.
Oh, yeah, when you get up close, you can see the detail on the wood.
Mm-hmm.
It almost looks like an Amish rocking chair. Rails of an Amish rocking chair?
He's not solid. You can look up through him and see the sky and just kind of like see what he's seeing at this perspective.
What would you like visitors to take away with them about bugs and pollinators?
I think it's important that the visitors, after seeing David Rogers' Big Bugs Plus Pollinators exhibit, really go home with a sense of what can I do?
It's actually easier than you might think. Pollinators are looking for the same things we are. They're looking for food, and they're looking for water, a bird bath, or even a small bowl of water with maybe a rock or two in it that just come above the surface of the water. That's great. And plants that are blooming at different times of the year that provide nectar and pollen, and try to avoid using any kinds of pesticides. So that's really what you can do.
That was Mark Miller and Beth Exton of the Pittsburgh Botanic Garden. David Rogers' Big Bugs Plus Pollinators runs through September 15th. It's funded in part by the Laurel Foundation, which also funds the Allegheny Front. More at AlleghenyFront.org. That's the Allegheny Front Environment Update. I'm Carol Holsoppel.
The Allegheny Front is based in Pittsburgh and reports on regional environmental news. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Brianna Heaney, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Emily Rice, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, Liz McCormick, and Maria Young. Emily Rice produced today's show. I'm your host, Teresa Wills. This is West Virginia Morning.